This is Tech News Briefing. I'm Tanya Bustos reporting from the newsroom in New York. So just in case you weren't aware what culture exactly you were living in, one of them is the always-on work culture, where colleagues text and email us at all hours of the day and night expecting a quick response. But if you've had enough and need a break, certain strategies can keep you happily out of reach and not out of a job. But first, these tech headlines. The Trump administration takes aim at Google, calling the tech giant to halt development of a project it said would accelerate censorship efforts in China. In a speech that outlined the White House's long list of frustrations with Beijing, Vice President Mike Pence called on companies to reconsider business practices in the world's second largest economy. In a project dubbed Dragonfly, Google is testing a mobile version of its search engine that would adhere to China's strict censors. And while it has drawn pointed questions from a bipartisan group of senators, Mr. Pence's speech was the first public condemnation from the White House. A spokeswoman for Google declined to comment on Mr. Pence's speech and instead referred to a previous statement that described the company's work as exploratory. U.S., British, and Dutch authorities jointly accused Russia of a widespread hacking campaign, describing a persistent effort by the Kremlin to attack agencies that exposed Moscow's alleged misdeeds. This includes doping by its athletes and the poisoning of a former Russian officer in Britain. The 41-page indictment names three defendants who were previously charged by special counsel Robert Mueller. The U.K. also said that it believed Russia was behind a series of major hacks, including the disclosure of doping test results from U.S. and other athletes. According to the journal, security researchers said the indictment was likely to have major impact on further Russian hacking. And where have all the biotech deals gone? Biotech companies are some of the riskiest in the market, and the journal says that is one reason for the recent drought in big deals. So far this year, there have been four U.S. biotech acquisitions of publicly traded companies worth more than $100 million, and none since May. There were five last year and eight in 2016. And while that is fairly brisk activity by historical standards, many investors had expected a busier year. While biotech stocks offer investors some of the best growth potential to be found, the journal says right now it is particularly hard to choose winners and losers, and that means investors picking biotech stocks shouldn't count on a buyout anytime soon. Coming up, a lesson in how to disconnect from the always-on work culture. So if you're like everyone, you are never more than a few feet from your smartphone, thus making your default work setting always on. Smartphones and innovative apps make every response less painful. It only takes a second, but those rapidly accumulating seconds are just tech's version of death by a thousand cuts, expanding the workday's boundaries until it seamlessly blurs with the rest of civilian life. Whoa. That's according to the Wall Street Journal's Matthew Kitchen, Gear and Gadgets editor for the Wall Street Journal's Off Duty. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
Of course. So what I liked about your latest piece was the nostalgia factor, because you kind of took us back to where it all started, or your theory in terms of where this always on work culture all started. And it might just be the brick phone, not unlike the one Michael Douglas used in Wall Street, to show that you're always working, always staying ahead of the game. You make the case that's where we can kind of see it as the first device that made us always accessible.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting to go down that lane. The Motorola Dynatac actually came out the year I was born, so I obviously never had one myself. But, but at the same time, that was kind of the thing that launched this ability to take your work with you rather than getting to leave everything at the office. So as soon as you could, you know, remove yourself but never remove work from your person, it kind of made it easier. And I also kind of, in the lead up to the story, I talked to my father, who had a car phone installed into his Buick in 1985.
Sure.
And he just said that was the thing that kind of changed the entire workforce for him. He would sit in our driveway for 2 hours after work just talking to LA because they were still working. And so it just kind of expanded on that over and over.
And from the brick, you know, Zach Morris cell phone emerged things like pagers and, you know, the first laptop, instant messenger. It was a slow progression to where we landed today, which is these constant smartphone notifications, those little red numbers that keep us fixated on our phones. As easy as it is to justify how inescapable it is, science and data, it backs up that we are all working too much and it's not good for us, right? So some go as far as to say that we can't truly thrive with this always-on culture.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to talk to Greg McKeown, author of Essentialism, for this piece, because he his whole philosophy is about stripping down everything you're doing and kind of getting to that essential thing and kind of having that opportunity to say no. And when he and I talked, his big thing was having the ability to say no to, you know, your bosses, your managers, and people like that, having the ability to turn off those notifications and to ignore them until the next day when you're in the proper work setting. And while that's very scary for a lot of us.
He said the next day, and I got a chill.
Another person I talked to, who shall remain nameless, talked about it putting a governor on ambition. They kind of said that it felt like it that decision would limit their ambition, their ability to kind of thrive. And I think that scared a lot of people. I know I reference one Harvard Business Review study that 43% of the respondents had said they felt like they were sacrificing part of themselves and part of to the always on work culture. And that was kind of one of the more terrifying statistics that I came across.
Yeah. You know, what was interesting to me that there's so much of this happening that there's actually been labor laws in Europe and overseas that give us the, quote, right to disconnect and other initiatives that are happening all over the place. It really speaks to the cultural impact.
Yeah, there's kind of that need that if we can't be responsible for our own time and our own ability to disconnect, then, you know, somebody, some sort of higher power should be able to do it for us. Much more progressive societies, or at least much more relaxed societies like France. I know Germany's looking into it. I know Italy's already done it, and the Philippines is another one. Have, you know, really taken this idea to heart that workers should not have to respond to bosses and managers after they leave. It's fascinating. I don't know if it will ever catch on here.
Carry over, right?
I think the main thing that they kind of pointed out in France is that it's not even that you can disconnect, but that if you choose not to, if you can make that choice, then you can't be dinged or you can't be get in trouble for not quickly responding immediately to a boss.
Really interesting. You know, so in the meantime, what are we left with to do here and now? You know, it's only recently that you see companies like Apple, Google, et cetera, starting to take initiative and trying to get us to disconnect a little bit more. What do you find that's helpful? I've been kind of playing around with Apple's new iOS. You know, it's one thing that is interesting is when you know how much time you're spending, that really kind of keeps you in check. So with Apple, I think that's sort of their big initiative with screen time. What do you think about that? Is that working for you?
Yeah, the screen time function is really fascinating just to be able to show you how much time you're spending. And obviously, it can kind of almost shame you into putting your device down. But at the same time, it's not creating almost a barrier from people getting in. And so the bigger thing for me has been turning off all those notifications so that your phone's not blinking or chiming every 5 seconds. It's a lot of the using the do not disturb functions is really nice because then you can kind of set parameters around where you are or when you are, all those things. Those have been kind of helpful. And the thing I like most, and kind of we referenced AOL Instant Messenger earlier, one of my favorite things is the away message and the away status, which
that's coming back, right?
Yeah, Slack uses it, and Slack uses it very well. I talked to while reporting the story, I talked to a Google engineer, Ross Goodwin, who he was really kind of intrigued by the idea of making a universal away system or kind of a universal status that your contact list in your phone can kind of broadcast to the people who would be texting you that you're not available. The possibility of that happening is very remote just because of how complicated all of the different technology companies are to get on board with that thing. But it seems like some way of, you know, cluing people into when we have turned off is probably the best method.
So for a look down memory lane, more specifically, Matthew calls it a history of tech's invasion of our private life. You can head to WSJ.com and look for Off Duty. Matthew, great stuff as always. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And that is Tech News Briefing. Reporting from the newsroom in New York, I'm Tanya Bustos. Thanks for listening.